Good day, citizens of the free world, from border to border, coast to coast, and to all the ships at sea, I bring you a warm welcome. This is your correspondent, Jim Tate, and thank you for tuning in today to the Tate Chronicles. Join me as we cut through the fog that exists at the leading edge of healthcare technology. Our mission is always the same. We're searching for beneficial disruption in healthcare from emerging technologies. My guest today is Ed Bucksnell. He's the founder and CEO of Clinical Blockchain. Clinical Blockchain is involved in quite a few different initiatives. They're involved in such projects as clinical trials, recruitment, clinical information, patient positioning, messaging, a bunch of other things. Ed, thanks for joining me and our audience today on this episode of the Tate Chronicles.
Thank you very much, Jim. I really appreciate the opportunity.
And I feel the same way about the your willingness to be here with us. Let's just kind of go back to the beginning, Ed. What was behind you deciding to start Clinical Blockchain, and what are you trying to accomplish there?
Well, I think initially it goes to I've got a background of about 25 plus years in healthcare. Was very involved in some initiatives like creating standards under ASTM 1238, which ended up becoming the clinical side to HL7. And kind of fast forward to today, or actually I'd say about 2.5 years ago, this blockchain technology started to look interesting in some aspects. I'd say I was contrarian in with some of the major claims that were made about it, you know, such as solving full-fledged electronic health records and electronic medical records. But I saw aspects of the technology, specifically a feature of blockchain called the zero-knowledge proof, which could be very beneficial at the fringes of healthcare, and effectively helping folks deal with what I call the secondary data silos, which are the ones that are not necessarily being looked at by many of the systems out there today.
You know, and one thing you touched on there, Ed, that really rings true for me is there some things, some processes that blockchain technology is very good at, such as being a database for large amounts of data. But in the things that it is good at, it is fantastic. And so we just have to use the proper tool for the proper job, it sounds like here. Now, one thing, and I guess about 2 weeks ago, I read an article you wrote, and it was called Blockchain Tokens Are Dead in Healthcare. It kind of reminded me, Ed, to tell you the truth, of back in the early days of the big internet bubble when somebody wrote an article in the New York Times or Washington Post about the burn rate of some of these early internet companies and how they just couldn't exist. Not that it's exactly the same, but these startups that were really essentially financed by token sales, how sustainable was that in the long run? So have you been getting feedback on that article? Is other articles you've been writing?
The feedback, I'd say overall has been, you know, very positive. You know, comments like, you know what, we finally are discussing the elephant in the room. Blockchain and the its best known use case, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and cryptocurrencies. Tokens work in that type of environment. They've already been proven to work in that type of environment. And many, I believe the ICO, it's called, we can call it a bubble, we can call it a number of things. On the positive side, I think, you know, people ended up throwing in their perspectives into the ring and tried to reimagine a number of parts in healthcare. Now we can definitely argue whether or not some of those use cases make sense or not. And I think from the article, you definitely get my take is that, you know, the use cases for the most part are pretty much dead in the water, and we've got to do a much better job, finding and matching the incentives that were identified in the Satoshi Nakamoto white paper, which everyone tries to emulate with these ICOs because that was just I guess, the thing to do, is you always had to have your incentive portion. And way too many of these folks that, you know, we're trying to reimagine healthcare, we're just saying, okay, well, a token is going to work. And, you know, I'm working with a group that's helping employers help their employees. We have a blockchain application that is about to go minimum viable product and be tested, which help patients save, you know, hundreds if not thousands of dollars on a medical bill. And it became painfully obvious, you know, to me during the process that, you know, if we could save a patient $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 off a medical bill that they receive from their doctor, that's going to be a heck of a lot more meaningful than, you know, receiving some nebulous, prospective type of token that may have minimal value compared to actually delivering results for the patient as they have a relationship with their doctors.
Yeah, you've pricked my interest for that description of that application. Can you say a little bit more about it, how it works, how it can save that kind of money, what does it do, and what type of technology is behind it, or is there technology behind it?
Yeah, it's, absolutely. The product, what we're doing is, patients, and just backtrack, you know, we have a trend in this country where everybody's facing higher deductibles. I was at a conference the other a couple weeks ago, and you know, literally everyone in the audience raised their hands that they've had their deductibles increase over the last 2 to 3 years. Now, with patients taking more and more responsibility, financial responsibility for their care, they're getting bigger and bigger bills. Now, what used to happen, employers, associations, municipalities used to take care of that delta or the increase in that deductible, whether it's from $1,000 to $3,000 to $5,000. The employer used to take care of that and actually manage those costs by applying adjudication technology, by applying utilization review technology, usual and customary cost analysis, things of that nature. Today, now, the patients really don't have those types of tools to do the analysis, you know, certainly on an individual level, as was done previously before these high deductible health plan initiatives were put into place. So we've developed a technology which also allows a patient to literally take a picture of their bill that they received from their provider, and we actually write to a blockchain for transparency purposes, allowing people to see the transaction has been logged. And what we end up doing is passing the appropriate information through a series of machine learning steps and processes, extracting that information and deciding whether or not there's that bill makes sense. You know, is $1,000 for an MRI in Philadelphia, does that work? How does it compare against other MRIs of that same CPT code?
Sure.
Or specific procedure? So
sure.
Giving those tools to a patient, and then if the patient, let's say the patient doesn't have the money, you know, which happens, you've got patients going going bankrupt at record paces these days, and those bankruptcies are, you know, patients obviously feeling stressed. Doctors end up writing off those bad debts and accounts receivable. So we're basically inserting ourselves in that process. We have the front end, obviously, a technology application, but there's ultimately people that get involved as well in order to help make a negotiation occur. And the group we're working with basically negotiates about 65% of the time they save patients anywhere between 25% and 50% on their bills. And we hope to increase those numbers as we deploy our system.
You know, that's a good example of addressing a specific pain point and improving and modifying the process around it to gain savings. Now, it's kind of like you're using blockchain, and it sounds like some artificial intelligence there to improve that process. Let's talk about some other kind of use cases that are out there, specifically in healthcare. You were kind of talking about the reimbursement cycle there. Some of the ones that I see, and I'd like to hear your opinion on them, the very complex, expensive, and time-consuming issue around professional credentialing, which patients are never exposed to, but certainly it costs hospitals and medical organizations lots of time and lots of money. And so it seems like an application like that is very ripe to be totally disrupted by some type of blockchain application where credentials are stored on a blockchain and then they can be trusted and nobody has to check those particular or validate those particular credentials again. Seems to be a few different kind of use cases like that are almost, to me, a slam dunk.
Yeah, Jim, you're 100% correct. Actually, as kind of a, even before the credentialing, or as part of the credentialing process, there's actually a consortium that has come together. They call themselves Synaptic Health Alliance. And, you know, two of the key people that founded that or created, germinated that idea are Kyle Culver of Humana and Michael Jacobs from United Health Group or Optum 360. And they, they now have created a group that also incorporates their respective companies as well as MultiPlan, LabCorp, Quest, and a couple of other folks in order to substantiate and authenticate the provider directory process. And I met with Kyle and Mike about 2.5 years ago back at a DC healthcare blockchain conference, and today, as I said, they with the Synaptic Health Alliance, they're putting the first stakes in the ground to really authenticate the addresses, the locations, the office hours, the insurances that providers have, which obviously have an impact on patients because, how many times does a patient call up when they come to the doctor's office and then find out, well, geez, we no longer take that, health plan. So,
exactly.
It ends up becoming by making sure all these folks get their acts together and they all have internal departments. There's no question they try and keep these things up to date, but you've got such a situation where these companies, in one case, that obviously are competing with each other, really do have like a multi-billion-dollar, and estimated anywhere between I guess $1 to $3 billion, just figuring out these, where a doctor is or a provider is located, what the actual address is, and what plans they have, and it's a use case that makes sense. Everybody wins. There's cost savings for the organizations. And then, ultimately, once that information is shared with the patients are getting better information as well. So, definitely layering on the other pieces, like such as the credentialing, professional certifications, all of those types of aspects make perfect sense. And, there's actually a company in Philadelphia that I've been talking to called Verily that, is looking at utilizing blockchain solutions to help authenticate the professional certifications of not just healthcare professionals, but anybody that says sure. That they are have a skill, let's say on a LinkedIn, they would be able to authenticate it. So I 100% agree. That's a great start. And frankly, I would love to plug into those types of authenticated blockchains with our own solution.
I like use cases like that because that takes an existing situation and really improves with it. It's kind of like when the first word processors came in and in 1 year everybody threw out their typewriters unless they were going to address an envelope or something like that. And there's almost you put something like that together and you don't even have to convince people. It's just so overwhelming. Now, I see a lot of use cases that are great ideas but are kind of outside current culture. I'll give you an example. Everybody sells their, everybody does these consumer-based DNA testing kits, and you pay $59 or $99, and you get your part of your DNA back, and who might be your third cousin, stuff like that. And then those companies, of course, are licensing that DNA data for hundreds of millions of dollars on the back end. And so that data is being monetized, but the patients don't get any of it, or the owners of the DNA don't get any. So there have been some startups that allow you to get your DNA data and put it on their site, and then if a pharmaceutical research organization wants a million sets of these files, they pay X amount, and if you provide some of your, you know, one of your DNA files, you get paid, whether it's in euros or dollars, or usually it's tokens. And so, I mean, that is a great fix to that problem, but right now, nobody's involved with monetizing their own data. So even if it works perfectly, people are not there yet, but the concept of around professional credentialing and provider directories and things, that's happening real now. Right now, it's just very inefficiently done. And that's the kind of thing that I think we're going to see a lot more of in 2019, those existing problems that can be addressed on the back end with some distributed ledger technology or artificial intelligence or something like that. I think we're finally going to be able to see that. That's what I'm hoping anyway.
Yeah, I don't underestimate, and it all comes down to trusting the data more. And I don't underestimate the trust components of some of these emerging blockchain use cases and on the trust aspect. Another example that I've kind of dabbled in thinking about it, talked with a couple of folks about, but the more and more I've thought about it, it really does make a heck of a lot of sense. You've got all these doctors getting these referrals and getting rated on Yelp or ZocDoc or HealthGrades, and I talk with a couple of physicians, and they get bad reviews because some patient comes in and wants 80 milligrams of oxycodone, and when they don't get that prescription filled, all of a sudden they get flamed out on these doctor rating platforms. So the ability to potentially create more trust in representing what the patient has to say, and as well as what truly is going on at the physician office. Are they a bad doctor, or are they actually just practicing good medicine, and they've got a patient that maybe out of line in asking for way too much pain medication. So these types of things certainly happen, and I think if blockchain could help increase the transparency in those types of transactions as well, everybody's going to feel a little bit better about the system, because the things that I hear about folks, and obviously we've got physicians literally burning out and committing suicide at record numbers, we can't go ahead and walk into a physician's office and say, hey, I got this new system out there and I want you to try it, and it uses blockchain. I mean, literally, that's a go-to-market strategy that is just already should be thrown in the fireplace.
Yeah, if anything, that doesn't excite people. That that makes them worried. The kind of consortiums that you mentioned a few minutes ago of these large organizations that are competitors but probably see the potential to work together to solve some of these problems around directories and credentialing and things of that nature, I would think would probably be running on some type of private blockchain. Where they have control of permissions and who's controlling the nodes and things like that. But a lot of the work has been done on the public blockchains for healthcare use cases, Ethereum with smart contracts in particular. But let's talk about Ethereum a little bit, because this is a situation where you have decentralized technology that's being developed in a decentralized way. And so we're not used to seeing that. We're used to a company saying, these are my four milestones, I'm going to hit them and move on. Ethereum has yet to be able to solve the scalability issue, and they're having trouble doing their upgrades right now. Where do you see the public blockchains going in terms of scaling, I mean, solving these scalability issues?
Well, I've got a couple of ideas on that. You know, I've been around, and I was around when I remember Athena Health trying to go ahead and, you know, having get into physician offices, and they were having incredible problems because the cloud was so unreliable, and doctors' offices were literally running accounting systems, two different accounting systems, because the reliability was so problematic. I know a number of folks that, you know, are working specifically on, you know, some of these scaling issues, and I think there's also, you know, some ways around it. For instance, you don't necessarily have to, a lot of people, they hear blockchain and they think that it's the entire application is all, you know, going to be built on this technology. When in fact, many of the applications, the applications that we're building at Clinical Blockchain are 99.9% of it is, you know, really basic Java or Python and built on technologies that are, you know, frankly centralized. Now, the addition of blockchain that we're adding to it is we're making sure we're writing timestamps that identify what when information may have been updated, modified, or changed, but we're not executing all of our transactions on a blockchain. I mean, for instance, if someone actually wanted to load an MRI onto a blockchain, as an example, that the cost just to load a single MRI could be. I was at a conference meetup yesterday, and someone estimated it would be about $500,000 if they used the Bitcoin blockchain. I think the answer to your question is we're going to see much more of a hybrid model where there's going to be a lot of these permission blockchains that are spun up, you know, under platforms like IBM's Bluemix or Amazon's blockchain service AWS or Microsoft's Azure, and then we're going to see some transaction files or additional transparency being written, possibly to additional public blockchains, so people can see, okay, I know these transactions occurred, and if they're on both sides of, let's say, the public facing, as well as someone can see the private side as well, you could put those transactions together. I think that additional transparency, it may be a baby step. It's not 100%, but I think it helps us get to other ways of thinking about how this additional distributed ledger technology is going to help us advance healthcare.
I appreciate that answer. As I have talked to folks and interviewed people in the field of these new technologies and healthcare use cases, one issue that seems to come up from time to time has to do with, where do you find blockchain developers? Do you take your own Java developers and get them educated in blockchain? Or, you know, is it difficult to find people that can help existing companies get up to speed? What are the employment opportunities like for blockchain-related developers?
Yeah, a few months ago when people were just going hog wild with all these tokens, not only were blockchain developers that had any realistic experience tough to find, but they were also extremely expensive. I think, you know, some of the numbers I saw were, you know, north of $150,000 for, you know, someone that had, you know, about 6-7 months of experience developing on some of these blockchain projects. So what I've seen is that there's some folks out there that, you know, get it. If you're a really good programmer, you know, whether, you know, on Python, JavaScript, whatever the case may be, utilizing the more recent tools. I think the tool sets that you're seeing right now to help do these projects, whether it's Truffle or Parity, and, you know, the literally hundreds of tools that are out there to help people program on various blockchains, whether it's Ethereum or EOS or some of these other platforms that are out there. With those tool sets, it helps make the environment a little bit easier. I would say the people that are doing kind of the fundamental modification of code or trying to build code onto a blockchain from scratch, then that you're looking at a developer that probably isn't just going to be a developer, but probably will have to have them on as founders as well, just because their talents are going to be so frankly wanted.
Well, and this whole area is so new. I would think one of the most desired skills would be a use case analyst to look at what you have and see where this technology can bring improvement, and if not, say it doesn't bring improvement.
You're 100% on target, and you know I think what we saw with the ICO, the issue, and those trends, you had a lot of folks just going ahead and putting white papers out there, whether or not they had a lot any healthcare experience or not, or understanding as to what the implications were of those use cases and whether they would actually be financially viable. And from any business perspective, with the recognizing how tough the healthcare landscape is, we've gone through what we hope is that hype cycle, and now hopefully people are sitting down and going through these use cases, and even then I'd have to say when the technology of a smartphone and Steve Jobs launching the iPhone, when that came out, nobody really had the idea in mind of an Uber and sharing your cars with people, or an Airbnb, sharing your houses with people that are total strangers. So, those use cases were pretty much perfected the way they are right now. And frankly, even Airbnb, I think they on one of the shows they said they went through 100 some venture capitalists before they finally got their first round of funding. So it's a I think we're going to see some traditional aspects, but obviously having patients weigh in a much more passionate way than they have ever been able to do so before. I think blockchain is going to provide those types of avenues for making connections that the traditional centralized technology just isn't able to do.
And it's going to be really exciting the next couple of years here. Ed, we're totally out of time. I can't believe how it kind of rushed past it. So let me talk to our audience, and thanks for joining us on this episode of the Tate Chronicles. I offer a special salute to my guest, Ed Buxtell. Ed, thanks for coming aboard today.
Jim, thank you very much for your time.
You can find more information on this show's program page at healthcarenowradio.com. Until we meet again, here's wishing you smooth sailing and safe harbors.